Hey there, I'm Kevin Daisy.
And I'm Eric Olson.
You're listening to the Managing Partners Podcast, where we interview top lawyers about how they're growing their firms. Hello, everyone. This is another episode of the Managing Partners Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today, I have a guest that's right outside of Baltimore, Maryland, Wendy Merrill. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, Kevin.
Absolutely. So today we're going to be talking about leadership and alignment within your firm and how important that is. And that's what Wendy's experience is in, but I'll let her kind of dive in first off to tell us, you know, her background and how she got into what she does. And I'm excited to learn from her today. So Wendy, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. So I am the founder and CEO of Strategy Horse. I also am a co-founder recently of The Savvy Advocate, which I'll talk about in a little bit. So it's kind of exciting to be a serial entrepreneur, I suppose, in the legal space. I have been working with, thousands of lawyers and lots of law firms over the last 12, 13 years. And I love working with lawyers. I am not a lawyer. I am often asked if I am. At this point, I feel like I might as well be. But I am very focused on revolutionizing the practice of law, if I may be so daring in saying so. My Strategy Horse is a consulting practice that is all dedicated to improving profitability for law firms. I work mostly with small to mid-sized firms around the country, and I'm also actually around North America. And we look to improve profitability through creating more alignment, I should say, internally. It starts at the leadership level and improving engagement, which is, you know, how do we actually live and implement what we've discussed at the leadership level? What is the strategy? How do we make things happen? How do we measure? And that's a little bit about Strategy Horse. The name Strategy Horse is a little bit of a, I'm a horsey person, and anybody who sees my stuff on LinkedIn is
there a horse behind you? I see a couple.
Lots of horses. Yes. Lots and lots of, you could see the rest of my office, I indulge my five-year-old horsey girl fantasies by having lots of horses around. And yeah, it's fun. And the branding is fun, actually, because I've had clients and friends all over the place send me little horse things and tag me in horse pictures, which is so much fun. And then my other business that I own with my partner, Liz Lippi, is The Savvy Advocate. And this is a very unique program that's designed to provide professional development services and training for associates, which is, associates, you know, the war for talent has been raging for a while, and I don't see it stopping anytime soon. Associates are law firms' most valuable asset, yet they're not investing properly in it. That's what we do. And the business has been around now for a couple of months. We're really excited about it. So yeah, I live and breathe the legal space, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I love it. And I like the name, and, you know, goes off your passion for horses. And I was telling Wendy before, I'm from a place where we have wild horses, and my neighbors had horse farms and things like that. So I can appreciate that. But no, I mean, to just quickly on The Savvy Advocate, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, I hear lawyers a lot of times saying they can't find attorneys or associates. Yeah. It's very difficult right now. And you don't hear a lot about programs, training, or investment into helping associates also with business development, marketing, and things like that for them to learn a lot of those things. You know, they're usually just getting thrown to work and kind of learning that way. But
it's sort of like throw them to the wolves way of learning, which is what happened with our baby boomer lawyers and our Gen X lawyers. But for a lot of the millennials and Gen Z folks, that approach just doesn't work for them. And right now, every firm in America, maybe even beyond, is looking for the same person, an associate with between, 3 years to 8-10 years of experience. I mean, the same person. So the competition is fierce. And that means firms have to get very creative and innovative and think outside of the box about how they attract people, how they bring them on, how they prepare them, and then how they hold on to them.
Yeah, no, I think it's a super, super important. And this is for any business listening, for your employees and your staff, and to have things figured out and have process in place and yeah. and have a plan for them, because otherwise they don't see it for themselves. They don't know where they're going to end up and if this is the place for them. So I'm all in for it. So let's jump back to, I guess, leadership and alignment and kind of strategy horse and kind of the role that plays for this episode. And I was telling Wendy a minute ago, I just had my leadership team in town, flew them up to our headquarters and, you know, just talking through things, you know, getting on the same page. What are our goals for this quarter? We can't do it all. So we got to pick and choose. And so, you know, we spent days in a room going through all these things, but also learn a lot about each other. You know, we're a very remote company for the most part. And so you get to learn a lot more about people when you bring them into a room and talk through things and ask each person, like, what issues are you seeing? You know, what things do you want to bring to the table? And not everyone always speaks up, right? And you got to kind of have to pull it out of some folks, and it, you know, opens your eyes quite a bit. So, you know, talking about that. So, you know, when you talk to a firm that reaches out or one that you get in with, what is really the process and how do you kind of start, you know, to understand what they have going on currently and things like that?
Well, the calls that I get are for a variety of reasons. Firms will reach out and say, you know, we're struggling with recruiting. We're struggling with holding on to our people. We're concerned about retention. Or they may say that, you know, we need to take a new look at our business development strategy, our growth strategy, marketing, or we have to think about succession planning. All these different discrete issues. I always know there's something underneath that. So we get to talking and I'll ask questions about leadership. Well, so what does your firm stand for? What, you know, how big is the partner group? When was the last time you came together and had the discussion like you had, Kevin, you know, and talked about strategy and plans and goals? And they all say, goals? So really through just a couple of questions, we kind of get to the heart of it, which is, well, no matter what your need is, we have to start at the top. We have got to make sure that whoever sits at the leadership table is aligned, completely aligned, which means compromising. And, you know, not everyone's going to agree, but as a leadership group, as partners, we have to at least be in lockstep about where we see the firm going and what we need to do to get it to where we want it to go. So the process what I'll do is we will schedule, I'll do interviews to speak one-on-one, have candid conversations, confidential conversations with stakeholders. You know, lots of good information comes from this, lots of different perspectives. And then I very delicately and confidentially weave that into my agenda for meeting with them on site and in person. And we have you could call it a retreat, you could call it a strategy session, you could call it a whole number of things, but it is essentially a stakeholders meeting where we get together and we talk openly. I am there to facilitate good communication so that people aren't getting too emotional. They're not taking it personal, because this stuff gets really personal. It shouldn't, but it does, because everyone's so invested. And to make sure that we have productive conversations where everyone is heard, we stay organized, we stay focused. And at the end of those sessions, we have objectives, we have goals, we have specific tasks, we have owners of the tasks, and we have timelines, so that whatever we do together doesn't just get put into a report and put on a shelf, which happens a lot. These are actionable items. And then the next stage is the implementation and engagement stage. So I'm there, my team is there to support the firm in making sure that they hit these goals, that we tweak as necessary. It's a roadmap, as I call it, that I give them the support needed. For example, let's say that they need to invest in their practice group leaders in terms of their leadership skills. So we might be working on our overall growth strategy. How do we attract clients? How do we attract attorneys? How do we attract staff? But then also, how do we make sure that those in charge of managing them have the skills? So it might be coaching. It might be a whole number of things. But at the end of the day, I am there to shepherd them through the process, to provide any kind of support I can, and to make sure that we hit our goals, and then we measure them.
So, yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that they might come to you with what they think they need or the problem that they're seeing, but they're probably not prepared to, you know, what they're getting into when you're like, well, we got to go right to the top and we got to start getting into this stuff. And so they might not be, you know, thinking there's a problem there. I would assume most of them think there's no problem at the leadership level.
Well, they may say that publicly, but privately, they always acknowledge it. Yeah. Or initially, in the initial conversation, oh, everything's fine. And then you scratch the surface just a little bit, and then people open up. I mean, that's human nature. No one wants to really air their dirty laundry. Yeah. Not saying it's dirty laundry, but sometimes it is, right? And, you know, it's hard, really hard to be a lawyer. And it's extra hard to be a partner in a law firm. There's just so many pressures and you're pulled in so many different directions. And law school does not prepare you to think like a CEO or an entrepreneur or a leader or a manager or a business owner. So it's an on-the-job learning, right? And so you're thrown into this position as a partner in a law firm. And it's kind of like, well, what does that mean? What's your role? How should we talk to each other? How do we work together? I'm a big fan of intentionality and making sure that we are explicit about expectations and roles. And because sometimes these things seem obvious, but they just don't happen or they don't work. So we've got to put kind of guardrails around the process. And some of the feedback I've gotten after these meetings is, you know, they kind of come in and they're not sure what's going to happen or what's going to go on. And by the end, people feel, well, here's the promise I make. I said, at the end of all this work, you're going to feel really excited, totally exhausted, hopefully exhilarated. And you're also going to feel relieved because you're going to feel like, okay, we have a plan. We're all on the same page. And we've aired out some of our grievances that ended up being, you know, some concerns are really legit and some of them are just miscommunication, lots of miscommunication. So we try to fix that.
Excellent. I love that.
Hey there. This is Kevin Daisy, your host and founder of Array Digital. If you're tired of wasting money with agencies that just can't get it done, then please check out my law firm, digital marketing agency at arraydigital.com. If you contact us there, you'll be sure to line up a meeting with me where we'll walk through your exact situation and come up with a plan for what you can do to improve your marketing results. I look forward to talking to you. Now back to the show.
You know, it's so important because, you know, I first come to me all the time, even this week, quite a few I've talked with that they just want more marketing. They want more leads. They want more this or that. And there's usually a lot more problems than just leads. It's intake. You know, call them to set up a meeting. Like they don't even answer the phone. There's no message. There's no person. Okay. They don't need more. They need more leads maybe. Yeah. But first off, yeah. there's other issues. So, you know, I kind of take a similar approach, but not as deep because I'm not going to go up the leadership ladder, but there's usually more issues and more things to uncover than just fix this, you know, or I want leads here or whatever, right? You got to look at deeper than that or we're going to fail probably for them. And so I like the approach that you take where you're going deep and you're going up the top and that's where everything starts. And, you know, I think as entrepreneurs, you know, we assume we got things figured out, especially if we're the only entrepreneur and the other people are just maybe working for us, maybe there's no partners, right? Mm-hmm. So someone's listening right now that doesn't have partners. They just have staff and they have an associate. You might have the vision and a plan, but they probably don't see it and they don't understand it. And they're definitely not on board for it. Potentially, they might just be there to get a paycheck. And you definitely don't want to have a firm full of people that just want a paycheck, right? You know, we want them to be on the bus, where the bus is going, and have the right seats on the bus. Like you're saying, the roles, responsibilities, all those things have to be figured out. So it's hard. It's complex at some degree, but you have to figure all those things out. So, and that's what this podcast is all about, mostly entrepreneurship and all the challenges with it. Nothing about the law. This podcast is nothing about how much do you know about the law? Like, that's not what we talk about here. So
no, it's about running your business. Cause at the end of the day, law firms are businesses. And, you know, I was thinking about what you were saying about this, I call it like an entrepreneurial spirit, you know, so you're not an entrepreneur in that you like earning a steady paycheck, but you have a sense of agency and you own projects and you own the mission and you're totally on board and rowing in the same direction as everyone else. Mm-hmm. And I find that when there is a disconnect, which there often is, one way to remedy that is to really take the time to understand people's motivation. So it's not enough just to say, you know, we're so excited as a firm, our goals are this and we're growing and we're great. But if people don't understand what's in it for them, and it's not just, it's staff, it's lawyers, partners, all they're thinking is great. So the partners are going to get richer off of me, exactly. Which isn't the case. But if it's not communicated saying, hey, you know, here's why you should care about the firm because you know, find out what's important to them. So for example, they may work for a particular firm because they, maybe it's a social justice firm and they care very much about that and they want to be impactful. We have to tie the success to their individual values, right? And that just doesn't happen. It's just, it's simple communication. It just, it doesn't happen. You know, I was also thinking about profitability as you were talking about all these things and all these little, these gaps in communication, these sort of stumbling blocks that we sometimes brush to the side, they are all profitability killers. And if we do not have, like, for example, I like to use the phrase billing hygiene a lot. Big issue in many, many, many firms. And by billing hygiene, I mean practices. Like how are you doing? Are your people turning their billing in on time, which I know makes a lot of folks cringe because it's an issue. Are you chasing them for their billing? Are they billing accurately? I mean, I've worked with firms where the associates will say, I don't understand. I'm working really, really hard, sometimes 12-hour days, and then their hours are not reflective of that. And there's this disconnect. Why? What's going on? Turns out they're not billing for things they should be billing for. They're not keeping track of their time. And they don't really understand how that affects the profitability of the firm. So we need to explain it. We need to empower them. Also, you talk about leads. Not all leads are good leads. And, you know, one of the questions I always ask lawyers is, do you have a minimum matter that you take? And they go, what do you mean? I said, well, is there something that's too small for you? And 99% of the time, the answer is, well, no, not really, because I was like, wait, no. You will not. It's an opportunity cost, right? If you don't identify the ideal client and the not so ideal client, how are you going to allocate your time and your energy and your resources? Because if you're spending time with clients that don't pay their bills, you got to chase them, or they don't listen to you, or they don't call you back, or they're not a good fit, that's actually not a profitable client.
Yeah, they can suck up a lot of your time. And if you look at the average case size and case value, right, you should establish where you need to be.
Yeah.
You know, especially the ideal client. What's your ideal client? And yeah, maybe that's not always going to be the case, but you should have a profile on what that looks like. Case value, size, type of client. You know, that's something I always ask, because I can do marketing, but okay, well, what's your ideal client?
Yeah.
You want volume and you'll go for the lowest ticket items, or do you want high net worth individuals, depending on what kind of practice areas you're at? So like say estate planning or divorce.
Yeah.
You know, I have some that will do anything, and I got some that will, well, they need to have a net worth of this. And it's, how do we adjust marketing and your assets and your brand to attract those higher net worth individuals versus what do we do for tactics just to get the volume for like a criminal defense that wants speeding tickets? Totally different approach.
It is. Yeah. And you know what? It's also the same approach for your staff and for your lawyers. You have to identify, it's not about fitting a seat to the person. It's about identifying what seats do we have to fill.
Yes.
And, you know, just like you talk about your ideal client, even make it up if it doesn't exist currently for you. It's the same thing. Well, what you need an associate. Well, what's their personality? What's their work ethic? What's their background? What's their experience? What's their skill set? All these things, right? If you don't identify that and you're just sort of casting a net and saying, well, anyone who has a JD and a couple years experience is fine, you're setting yourself up for failure and you'll have a retention problem.
100%. And like, you know, what are the seats, right? What's the next, you know, what's the, that look like for them? You know, what's the next step for that position, whatever it may be? Mm-hmm. Have you mapped that at least the next couple steps, or is it
a path to partnership?
There you go. Or, you know, it can even be the admin assistant path to office manager,
any kind of career path, right? People want to know. They want to know what's next. And it traditionally in law firms, that's not been done, right? But it needs to be done because people want to know what's next. Especially your younger generation, they want to know, what's my future going to look like? Am I on the partnership track? Do I not want that, but I just want to be a grinder? You know, you need minders, grinders, and finders. And that's okay, because those folks make a lot of money for firms, but they need to know what opportunities are available to them and how do they get there. So they need a guide, they need a path, they need goals, and they ultimately need the support to get there.
Yeah, because, well, they deserve that, and you should have that figured out. And also too, like I've been in the past, when younger in business, and I know lots of people that own businesses, and they'll bring up people like, yeah, I just let this person. I really liked them, so I just kind of made a position for them. Like,
yes. Oh, gosh.
Terrible idea. Like, you know, that's not how it should work. Like, you should, we have a position for you or we don't. And it doesn't mean you're the right fit. Let's figure that out. Maybe you are, but you should have that all figured out and fleshed out. And the other thing, too, is having conversations with them. Like, we hired an office administrator for our company a while back, and we had this one lady. She was tons of experience and could do a lot more than we were even hoping for. And we're like, oh, this could really work out great. And we had another young girl right out of college that was like awesome. And we were hired for part-time, and we were stuck between the two, but we're going to lean towards the lady with more experience. And we asked one question at the end, hey, this probably will go to full-time. I'm not sure when, but it'll probably go to full-time. And she's like, I'll never do full-time. This is part-time. This is all I'll ever do. And we, if we didn't ask that and find that out, like the position went full-time immediately when we hired the other person. And now she's bumped up, stepped up, and her position's morphed into a few steps up within a year. And so a part-time person would have been just a very temporary step for us, and we would have had to go find someone else. So really kind of thinking about all those things, like, is this person just here for like a little bit, or they have a plan? What's the position look like? Is it going to change over time? You know, you got to really think about a lot of that stuff, and or you're just going to have a lot of time wasted and churn with your staff.
And also, I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but I'm a realist. Uh-oh. And the expectation of people, young people coming into your firm as associates and expecting them to be lifers, it's just not realistic. Mm-mm. And there's a lot of statistics out there, a lot of things being written about it. And, you know, you hear, oh, well, you know, people won't stay longer than 3 years. I don't think that's true across the board. I also think that you may have more turnover sometimes in big law. But if you're not paranoid about it, right, and you just give the person as much support as possible, and if they decide that they think that the grass is greener elsewhere, support them, let them go, maintain, build that bridge, don't break it down, because guess what? Chances are that they will boomerang back, because I've seen it happen a lot. So unfortunately, breakups like that in law firms sometimes can go very sour, and they shouldn't. Right? They really, really shouldn't. And that's why it's important to have redundancy in terms of, you know, systems and backup. And that's not just for staff, but it's also for lawyers. We need SOPs or standard operating procedures. We need to know, you know, who does what and how does it work, so that if something happens to someone or they need a break or what have you, work doesn't stop and no one gets paranoid, not paranoid, but panicked rather. I think it could be the same. I think that also I see a lot of knee-jerk reactions in law firms if they lose an associate, for example. They go, oh my gosh, we need to hire another associate. And sometimes they don't need to. They just say, wait, before you do that, let's stop. Let's take a look at the bandwidth of all your current people on payroll. Yeah. I have a feeling that this person over here is at 80%, and this person over here is at 60%, and this person over here is at 120%. So let's see if we can reallocate a few things, maybe get rid of some dead weight, some non-paying clients. Wow, what an idea. And see if we really need someone else. Do we need to replicate that person, or do we need a different kind of hire? Or it's so important to just take those steps and think strategically about it to make the right hire and quite frankly, to not waste money.
No, I like that a lot. And that's rings true for me because, well, two things. One, we got a gentleman exiting our firm here soon. He's awesome. Amazing. No one wants him to leave. He's been perfect. Great the whole time, but he's got a family kind of business thing that he's been kind of falling into. And he's got things to do with his family. And so he's just been amazing here. But you know, we're supporting him, and we got, you know, it happens. Right. And so,
right.
You know, instead of getting upset and all this stuff, like, hey, people are going to do what people are going to do, and they have life changes. And so I've had folks go start their own businesses that we wanted them to stay here, but now they're friends and they refer us business, or we refer them business. But, and I'm excited to see them do cool things and grow themselves. And so you definitely can't hold on to people. For a long time, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this person's leaving. Oh my gosh, what are the teams going to think? And I was worried about all these things that could happen. They're just out of your control for the most part. The best thing you can do, like you said, is give them the best chance at your firm possible. All so much clarity that they see where they're going and the opportunity, and that you're looking out for them. And you have a much better chance that they're going to stick around and you want that problem. But on the other topic is, we've had this happen multiple times where someone will leave and we're like, oh, put out an ad for hiring right away. And then but a few times we've been like, well, let's wait.
Yeah.
And maybe we didn't do it. Maybe we weren't as intentional as you're talking about being, which I like better. But we found out we didn't even need to backfill that, or go to your other staff and say, hey, opportunity, you know, we have a role to fill and extra work to do. And maybe it's an opportunity for others to step up, take on a little extra workload. Maybe they didn't have a big workload, or, you know, maybe, hey, can we push through this? And, you know, it's an opportunity for those folks to shine, to step up, to get in leadership mm-hmm. roles. And so I think it creates a lot of opportunity as well.
I think
you need to hire that, you know, you delay it a little bit, but you still go fill it.
Two things I would add to that. One is, you also want to be careful. If you're going to ask people to step up, you want to make sure you still do your due diligence and understand what their bandwidth is. Because I've also seen situations where everybody's at 100% and they're like, oh gosh, so-and-so left. Now that just means more work for me. And that is not good for morale, right? But the other thing is, hopefully people aren't leaving and leaving you shocked that they're leaving. You've got to communicate with people. If the worst way to find out that you need to make changes internally is when someone walks out the door on an exit interview, right? So we need to make sure that we're regularly communicating with our people, not just once a year, hopefully monthly, if not more, and also set goals and objectives and make sure that you hold people accountable. And if I may say, self-evaluations, not a good thing. And so many firms still do that. And, you know, I think you should involve people in talking about, well, how do you think you've done this year? And, you know, absolutely. But they're in an employee position, which means they should have someone supervising them. That's why they're in that position, because they need the feedback. They need to learn. They need the structure and they need the accountability. And if someone in a management position is just sort of like, well, let me know how you think you're doing. First of all, it makes the employee feel very uncomfortable, right? It's weird.
Hey, do I say good things about myself? Or
yeah. What? I mean, I've had to do this. I was like, I don't know what to say. I don't know how this works. You know, so again, I think it needs to be kind of a team effort, but it needs to be driven by whomever is in charge of evaluating that person.
Yeah. Yeah. So my business partner, Eric, he came from a bigger company before we owned our own companies. And that was one thing he always hated, was he came from a big firm that was like, all right, you tell us what you think and we'll tell you, and then we'll see how close we get. And,
like, it's so cringy. So yeah. Cringy.
So no, we do one-on-ones with every manager does one-on-ones with their teams, their staff, each one of them, each team member, every single week.
That's
and
then, great.
Yeah,
for law firms need to do that as well. You know, the challenge though with that is, it sounds like you have a pretty structured org chart. Small to mid-sized law firms usually are very flat organizations. They don't have, you know, sort of C-level and mid-management. They don't have that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they should necessarily have that, but you do need to have some kind of hierarchy, because otherwise you can't hold anybody accountable. So if you have a number of practice groups, but nobody in a real leadership position, for example, in a practice group, how can you have goals for that particular practice area? How can you have a budget for that practice area? How can you manage the staff and the team in that practice area? So and you want to give people an opportunity to step up into a leadership position, because it's a great launching pad into partnership, right? But they have to have the experience.
No, yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, for us, we have more of a structured org chart, like you're saying. But yeah, I mean, just establishing these things and having those one-on-ones, and no one should be surprised, right? We have these conversations often.
Right.
And there's no surprises. And like when someone leaves, you know, for the most part, if we have someone leave, which is not too typical, but like they stay on, they help transition, they even help us find the next person.
That's nice.
And then work with them for a week before they leave. Processes are all documented, and you know, and they're usually gracious enough, hopefully, again, if it's a good situation, that they'll complete processes they were even working on or whatever. So that's just what you want to have. And instead of like, oh, boom, this person's leaving and they're left today.
Right.
And we have no clue what they're doing, you know. Now we got to figure out what they were doing, how they were doing it, you know.
Right. And everyone, the excuse is always, well, we're just so busy. We're so busy. Well, everyone's busy. And I haven't met a law firm in the last several years that doesn't have more work than people. I mean, this is a good thing, but everyone's so busy, right? So when we're busy, what happens? These kinds of things fall to the wayside because we don't prioritize them. But then when someone leaves or there's a fracture somewhere in the foundation of the company, we wonder why. So we do have to take some time and be proactive, as well as, you know, another thing that eats into profitability is partners' time being spent on things other than practicing law, like training, which is how it's done in most firms. And it's extraordinarily expensive. I mean, I could tell you numbers that would blow your mind because the partners bill at the highest rate. And if they're spending an inordinate amount of time trying to train their people, also not being skilled trainers, you can imagine it piles up. And you know, the other thing is that partners that are handling a lot of administrative things. So if you have a partner that's in charge of all technology or running the office, that's really a staff. It should be a staff role. So even small firms with 3 lawyers, 5 lawyers, I always encourage them to consider hiring a COO or a firm administrator because, oh my gosh, will it make you and save you money? It's really the same thing. Because the fears, well, we're not big enough. We don't need that, or we can't afford it. Yes, you can. Even with the salary you're going to pay a good person and you need to pay them well, I can show you here, here, and here how you're going to make money from this.
No, it's huge. Yeah. And kind of back to alignment and all this stuff with profitability. You want those entrepreneurs, I guess. You want people on the team like figuring stuff out that's beyond what their call of duty is. They're talking about things that the firm can do to change, to do better things. Hey, I came up with some of my own things here. Like we encourage that here, but you want those people that kind of start to show up and they care deeply enough about the firm that they're thinking out of the box and they're trying to figure out all the ways that we can do things better. Not that we're always going to take their ideas and run with them, but those are your A players. They're getting all their work done.
Yeah.
They're documenting everything. And then they're also going, hey, what about this? And bring that
in the context, in the context of law firms, I call that firm citizenship, which is a struggle because that's non-billable time.
Sure.
Right. And so the almighty billable hours, the pressure. But if you want people to be entrepreneurs and you want people to buy in literally and figuratively, you have to incentivize them to want to be a good firm citizenship and to be ambassadors for the firm and to share ideas, like you said, but they have to be motivated. And a pat on the back isn't going to do it. It's got to be either, this is part of your compensation package, meaning you make this salary, not just it includes minimum billable requirements of X, but also that you spend a certain amount of time doing things to also grow the firm. And it's not just business development, it's mentorship, it's teaching, it's, sitting on a committee. But if you don't properly incentivize it and set expectations from the beginning, the firm's going to struggle with that. And I've seen that with several firms where there was confusion about that. And some younger associates would think that, or they equate whatever non-billable time they're spending to billable time. And it really is different. Sure. So you just got to be thinking about that and make sure that firms have a firm citizenship policy and that everyone is on board with, whatever that means to them individually.
Sure. And which is different than my company where, we're not doing the billable hour type of work. So I could see where that would be different. But yeah, I mean, for me, that's our top players. That's the best people we have. They're coming up with new systems, processes, software to improve what they do and their team does, which improves efficiency, effectiveness, right. In some cases, avoiding having to hire extra folks for positions we thought we needed. So there's a lot of things that come out of it, but they obviously stand apart from the wrench turning people that just, just want to do my job,
And you need those folks. That's okay because you need those people. Like in law firms, you need the grinders. Yeah. Not everybody can be a finder. My gosh, if you have a law firm that's all rainmakers, who's going to do the work? So you really do need to have a balance, a delicate balance of all of these things. These days, partnership is not necessarily for everyone, unlike the old days, right? And it doesn't mean a lawyer doesn't want to be a partner isn't valuable to the firm. If they're very productive and they're great on every other level, you want to hold on to them. but you got to figure out how to do that. So career paths are, you know, they're a little different than they used to be. And there are a few options that weren't considered just a few years ago.
No, that's a really good point. I had this happen to me. Entrepreneur here. I own multiple businesses and we're like, go, 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 let's roll. And yeah, I had one employee of mine a few years back. And as we were kind of growing and doing different things, I came to her and I was like, I can't wait. We're going to hire a few people under you. You're going to be moving up into leadership and blah, 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 blah. And she was just like, whoa, 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 whoa. She's like, I don't want to manage anybody. I don't want to do any of that. Like, I just want to do what I like doing.
Right.
And I couldn't wrap my head around it. I was like, what is she talking about? You know, she's crazy. Like, and so
you need people like that, Kevin.
Yeah. Well, I know
you
that
need,
now.
Not everybody can be a chief or a chef or you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, they say.
Well, I understand that now. But at the time, yeah. I was just like blinded by all this entrepreneurship stuff and was just like, what are you talking about? So, and then I realized, okay, people need different things. Like you're saying that they're not all motivated by the same things, money or whatever. So you have to figure out and go to them and what is important to you, right? And that, you know, I don't know if you've probably heard of this probably from multiple sources, but you know, what are your personal, professional, and financial goals, right?
Yeah.
And for each person, if you understood that for each person, you know, where they want to be personally, like they like to have a lot of extra time at home, or they like to have a certain amount of time off, or they just want security. Professionally, maybe they want to be the COO of the company or the managing partner, and they might tell you that as soon as they show up, or they might say, you know, I'm just happy doing what I do. But I think it's important to try to find that out. And financial, that's important.
Yeah, you gotta ask them. I mean, the best thing a manager can do besides meet people where they are, which might be tied to this as well, is ask them how they define success. You know, what does success look like for you? Well, it's having more time with my kids, or it's making this much money, or it's being able to take a vacation once a year. And the manager's job is to make sure they do everything they can to help that person reach that goal. That's the job, right? I'm here to help you and make you a huge success. So how can I do that with you and for you?
Sure. And I think most of the time we're busy, and so that doesn't happen. And so it's this project's due, or we got this to go, or, you know, so it's just none of those conversations ever take place. And next thing you know, a year or two goes by, they leave and you're like, what the heck? You know,
exactly.
Why'd they leave?
I don't understand. Yeah. And they think so there are many articles on why associates leave. Unfortunately, most of them are talking about big law, which is really a different world from a firm that's small to midsize.
Sure.
And they always say the number one reason is compensation. Okay. That's not, that may be what people say, but I can tell you from experience, it's not. And because what happens is if someone leaves, like there's usually something else going on. And in my personal experience, I have seen associates, because I've talked to them about this. Compensation figures in, absolutely. Sure, but they want, the number one reason I'd say is actually alignment at the leadership level. Like, what does the firm stand for? Where is it going? What's my future look like? I don't know, you know, the folks that are at the helm, I don't know if they know what they're doing. Because it's trust issues, and therefore they don't know what their future looks like. That's a big part of it. Or they're not getting training, professional development, and support that they need to do their jobs well. And it's not just the job of a lawyer is not just know the law, be able to, you know the technical side. There's so many other things that make good lawyers: good communication skills, management, leadership, business development, critical thinking. This is huge. Being able to connect dots, executive presence, gravitas. You know, the art of litigation, all of these kinds of things that are not taught formally. It's just sort of like, well, let's figure it out as you go, which is really unfair, because then when you're taking that approach, you're not setting up your younger people for success.
I think you're spot on for that. Because I mean, you absolutely love where you go to work every day. $5,000 or $10,000 is probably not going to make you leave. Not the difference. Nope. So.
And if it does, then there's another problem going on, because after taxes, it's not that much money.
Especially today.
Yeah.
No, yeah. So I think you're spot on. I love everything you're sharing, and sounds like a lot of firms would benefit from reaching out to you and talking with you. I actually pitch this book all the time, but this book's helped us a lot. And a lot of the things that we're talking about here is, you know.
Got it behind me on my bookshelf right over there.
Yep. You know, right seats, people. That's a big part of this, but, and then also, you know, And this book and many other books, I'm just saying that there's a lot of answers out there, but if you don't engage with Wendy, but you can help yourself, like start, step back, look around, you know, get books like Traction and see, okay, am I even having these meetings? So like the meeting structure for one-on-ones, daily huddles, all that kind of stuff we follow. And, you know, I think it's just easy to read something or listen to you and pick up a tip, but actually doing it and applying it is much, much more challenging. So,
yeah, so, it is.
So from Wendy, you know, what's one tip from a firm that doesn't hire you, but can take it and go help themselves improve where they're at? What's one thing you could share?
One tip. That's really hard for me, Kevin. I got to think about that. There's so many that come to mind.
Just look in the mirror and say, what am I doing?
You know, I would say to make sure that the partners of the firm, if there's more than one partner, of course, are completely aligned and understand what one another's roles are. They define them, what one another's strengths are, what one another's weaknesses are, so that they can support one another and set up a structure for better communication, set a vision, set goals, which should include clients, revenue, growth, space, people, all these kinds of things, and then make sure that they hold themselves and everyone else accountable, which is probably more than one tip, but it's all squeezed in under the umbrella of one tip.
Well, I mean, alignment, right? So
alignment.
If you go to Wendy's website, strategyhorse.com, spelled exactly the way it should be. Yeah, she kind of has like a graph, you know, a graphic on there, but showing all these things that really, you know, it takes to be truly aligned. And, you know, it's not just one thing you can do. It takes some effort, some time. So
yeah.
I would encourage you to, you know, reach out to Wendy, connect with her. What's the best way that folks could connect with you other than your website? LinkedIn. We talked about LinkedIn at the beginning.
LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. Yeah, that's how you and I met. And LinkedIn is a phenomenal tool. Please connect with me. Send me an invitation to connect on LinkedIn. I do a lot of thought leadership. I post at least once every day, all original content. So if you like what you heard today, like it's a great way to learn more. And also set up, you know, chats. You can contact me through my website as well. It'll send me an email and I'm happy to set up a time and just chat and provide an initial alignment assessment to see where there may be some gaps that we could work together on.
I love it.
Also, yeah. I would be remiss if I didn't plug my other website, if I may.
Oh yeah, go ahead. Sure.
For the Savvy Advocate. So it's a pretty easy website. It's either the savvyadvocate.com or even easier, savvyavvy.com, SAVVYAVVY.com. Check us out. And actually on the landing page, we've quantified the cost of hiring a first year associate and it will blow you away.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm going to have to check that out myself.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Yeah. I appreciate it. So yeah, check Wendy out, connect with her on LinkedIn. Put a comment if you're watching this live or on LinkedIn or YouTube, and I will connect you together if you don't can't find her. So, Wendy, well, thanks so much. I mean, this is important stuff and major problems, I think, for a lot of firms that probably think they need something else. Or in my case, like, we need more leads. We need more business. We need more this. We need more right, that. There's, right. There's
dig in. What's the underlying? There. Yeah. That's exactly. Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. This was a blast. It was really fun getting to know you and hearing all about your business as well. And thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate you coming on and sharing, and I'm sure everyone else does too. So everyone else, have a good day. You know, have a good weekend while you're thinking about all the things that she mentioned. And yeah, step back, look at your firm and are you aligned? And if there's a problem that you need to work on there. And if so, reach out to Wendy and connect with her. I'm sure she can put you in the right direction. So Wendy, thank you so much. You can stay thank on you. With me. We'll chat backstage, if you will.
Okay.
And everyone else, have a great day. Best of luck. Grow your law firms. See ya.
Take care.
Thank you for listening. We have been producing this podcast for years, have had hundreds of guests, and produced hundreds of episodes. We don't ask for much, but I do have one ask. If you find value in this podcast, please share it with one person just like you. The best way to do that is to send them to arraydigital.com, where we have a full library of all the episodes that they can sort by practice area and or state. So again, we appreciate you listening. and thanks for sharing.